Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
This is what I call freedom.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, folks. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio Broadcasting. Out of Chicago, Illinois, it is just about 6:03, 6:04 p.m. Chicago time. Yeah, and it's great. It's 87 degrees outside. Sun is not shining, but it was later, and it could come back. And I just hope that it's nice where you are and that you're getting out and you're enjoying this weather, or you will be getting out soon to enjoy the weather. It is great, and it's great. It is beautiful in the city of Chicago. And I'm just hoping everybody get out and have a good time, whether you're in Chicago or somewhere else. The weather is beautiful. The weather is fine. And we just couldn't ask for better weather. And like I said before, I'm going to say this again. I hope wherever you are, you're feeling great. You're not depressed. You're not feeling down. You're feeling like you want to dance. You know, I mean, you're feeling good about yourself. And that's one of the things can be used to make the world a better place. Just feeling great. That makes the just feeling great, you know, having a positive attitude. You know what I'm saying? And treating other people with kindness and courtesy, you know, and respect. It doesn't take money to make the world a better place. It just takes a little bit of your time. As I was talking to a guest the other night, it's like the man in the mirror syndrome. It's just if you want to make the if you want to make the world a better place, look at yourself and make a change. You know, it's that Michael Jackson kind of a syndrome, you know. And that's true. I mean, when I first heard the song by Michael Jackson, I said, it's true. I mean, I don't know if he wrote it, but I can find out. But anyway, it's all about making the world a better place. One show at a time, one book at a time, one story at a time. It's rough. Trying to make the world a better place is tough. It's a tough job. And the George Wilder Jr. Show cannot do it by itself. And you know that, right? We can't do it by ourselves. It's going to take every last one of us, level-headed people, smart people, intelligent people, bright people around the world to try to shake some sense into those who might be going astray. Who might be going astray. Anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You can follow me on Facebook. You can follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm all over the place, folks. And I want to say welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. At the date of this show, it's July 18th, Tuesday, July 18th. If you're listening to this, if you podcast this show later, you know that this is an earlier show. But still in all, folks, it's always a good show. I do my best. I pour my heart out into these things, you know, sometimes. Okay, my guest today is Janet Kleinman, and she's going to be talking about something similar to what I'm about to say. Goodbye, Russia. Hello, America. That's a story that I would just love to hear, you know, because there's so much going on in the United States of America that's Russia related. So why not have a guest on the show who seems to be saying to seem to have left Russia for America, put it that way. Goodbye, Russia, and hello, America. Janet Kleinman. I don't know if that's the title of a book or not, but we'll find out. All right. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Hate has no place here on my show. You know, it's just not going to happen. Not here. You know, if you don't like the show, don't listen. If you disagree with something, we can debate it. But hate has no place here. Yeah, I've got a few phone calls and over the course of doing the show, I've got a few people calling the show saying really nasty things about the show and about me. Yeah, I don't get it very often. Majority of the people who call the show and comment on the show, they say very positive things. But every now and then you get an asshole calling the show and just berating the show, berating me, and I have to cut them off. A lot of people who want to be nasty and call into the show, they don't know that I have a cutoff switch. You will be cut off, you know, and I have a screening apparatus. You know, I can screen you before you come onto the show. So if you start cussing and using bad language, you will not be on and you will not be invited back. And I will not accept your phone calls if you want to be nasty. You know, I mean, but like I said before, I don't get many nasty outbreaks of people calling in, being rude. But, you know, once in a blue moon, it might happen. You know, I'm pretty sure some people sitting at home saying, God damn, George, I don't agree with that. I just don't agree with it, George. I just do not agree with what you're saying. It's fine. I mean, it's fine if you don't agree with what I'm saying. So I say a lot of things sometimes. I know it can be a little bit challenging sometimes, but I speak from my heart. I have a lot of passion sometimes when I'm doing the show, and I know everybody's not going to agree with me. That's fine, because I don't want everybody to agree with me on some of the things I say. Because if everybody agreed with me, well, George, you're right. George, that's correct. That is so correct. George, you're right. You're dead on the money. You're spot on. See how boring that sounds? Isn't that boring? It's not actually boring. It's not debatable. I mean, I want people to, if I'm wrong about something, if you feel that you can share something more to the conversation that I'm having with the world, you can always chime in on that. I mean, you can call in, or you can email me, or you can inbox me, or you can post on my Facebook account or Twitter account. There's all kind of ways that you can express yourself to something that I might have said that you did not agree with. You know, you don't have to call the show. Let me call this guy. I sure in the hell didn't like what you said, George. Who do you think you are? You think you so smart. You think you know it all. No, I don't. I never thought that I knew everything. And I will never know everything. But I do learn stuff every day. I do learn stuff every day. I mean, I think all of us learn something, or should learn something every day. I don't care if I'm 165 or 175. You know, I'm going to always be learning stuff. I learn stuff from young people all the time. You know, yeah, I'm old enough to be, you know, this or that. But, you know, this is a new world. You know, this is a new world. We have millenniums, if I can say it. Did I say it right? Okay. And these young people are smart. They're bright. They're intelligent. And they know a lot of things than some of us older people know. So, yeah, I learn from people all the time. I learn from people all the time. And I'm not ashamed of it. You shouldn't be ashamed of it either. You know, if it's something I didn't know, I don't care if I'm 75 years old. If it's something I didn't know, hey, and I learned it from someone who's 18 or 19 years old, hey, I appreciate it. I'm just, you know, talking hypothetical and being, I'm not 75 years old, okay? All right. I just hope I can live to be 75 years old. With this crap out here, you don't know. I mean, all this stress around here, and especially around the White House, you really don't know what the hell's going on. So, yeah, I try to be positive. I try to be uplifting on my show. And that's what it's all about, making this world a better place, because Lord knows it has to get better. It could get a lot worse. It could get a lot worse. Believe me, we got Donald Trump at the helm. So it can get a hell of a lot worse. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the healthcare, the death of the healthcare bill. It's over, folks. This thing is dead in the water. And Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and all of these people are just pissed because it is dead in the water. They might try to revise it a week here or a week there, or a few months out, but and that should be great news for America as a whole. It's a damn shame that these rich people don't want you or I going to the hospital if we have to depend on governmental services. They don't want that. It's a shame. And I'm going to give the credit to the people of America who stood up and said, we do not want this. They picketed, they protested. They were down there in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol building, in the faces of these politicians, demanding that they do not touch Obamacare if they're gonna touch it at all, make it better, you know. So you got to give it to the people. A lot of these politicians, when they are defeated on something, they never say that it's the American people who actually brought them to their knees. They looking at their senator. It's always the senators just didn't vote for this. They didn't like this. But the reason why they didn't vote for it, because their constituency told them that it was something that they did not want and they could not support. So the reason why this bill is dead, you know, and I'm not going to go into a lot of particulars about it. I mean, it's all over the internet. It's all over the news. It's everywhere. So if you're going to find out information more about this, you can. But the thing about it, third time and out, okay? And I'm hearing that they're going to try and vote on the bill next week. The thing about this is Donald Trump is saying, he's saying repeal it and don't replace it with nothing. Do not replace it with anything. I mean, if you think about it, if you think back when Donald Trump was on the campaign trail, this guy was saying health care for everybody. Everybody's going to be covered. We're going to get rid of Obamacare, but everybody's going to be covered. And now he's saying throw everybody off. I don't care. You know, because a lot of his constituency, they are going against Donald Trump because what Donald Trump and the Republicans are doing are hurting those people, hurting the people who put them in office. Those people put Donald Trump and the Republicans in office, gave those guys the best health care, universal health care in the world. And now they want to take away yours. That's ridiculous. And they're doing it with a straight face. Well, we're going to take away your health care. But that's the best thing for America. That's the best thing for you. You're going to die. But look at it this way. It's the best thing for America. This is how the Republicans think. And they talk to you like you're crazy, like you're dumb, like you're stupid, you know. And they do. And they believe the crap. So they try to, you know, sell it to you. And all it does for me is make me vomit. That's it, you know, but it's dead in the water, and it's a good thing for America. It's a good thing for the United States of America that this is not going to go through. This is ridiculous as it can be, and we're just so happy for it. We're just so happy that the people stood up, the people talked, the people... their voices were heard.
Making the world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right.
Wealthiest family in America gets a $52 billion tax break as a result of the appeal of the estate tax.
That's correct.
Tell the American people why you think that's good when you cut Medicaid and you cut programs for kids.
We don't cut Medicaid. We're talking about repealing Obamacare. The results
that you mentioned. Throwing 23 million people off of health insurance. That's right.
Which is a CBO number that I think you just agreed could be wrong.
I didn't agree to that at all.
Listen, if he said, did he say we don't cut Medicaid?
Yes.
That is just a lie. That is a certifiable lie. Now, listen, you can debate the 23 million number. You really can. You can debate, well, maybe that's people that choose not to be on. I understand those arguments, right? I disagree with them, but I understand them. But $850 billion is real. Those are real cuts. Why does he keep lying? Why do the Republicans keep looking into cameras and lie?
Because
who do they think is stupid enough that you can't read the numbers in the Wall Street Journal? Okay, maybe you call this fake news. You can't call this fake news if you're conservative. It's very clear you're cutting $850 billion in Medicaid for the poorest of the poor. If you want to do it, embrace it. Don't lie about it. Stop lying about it. We know you're lying about it. We're not stupid. And you Republicans in the House have been lying nonstop about what you're not going to cut and who's not going to lose health coverage. Okay? We're not dumb. I understand. There has been a coarsening of political culture. I understand that Donald Trump lies all the time. And you're thinking he got away with it, right? And so you can get away with lying? You can't. All right? It's just like Bill Clinton. David Geffen was right. He was an unusually good liar. Bill Clinton somehow survived being a liar and lying every day. Hillary couldn't. You can't. Stop with a coarsening of political culture, okay? You know what the meaning of is, and you know what $850 billion is. So do not go to Capitol Hill and lie through your teeth every day. That's all I got to say. It is so maddening. This is my party. My party is going straight to hell politically. They really are. They're going straight to hell. They have embrace the coarsening of culture where the truth means absolutely nothing. Conservative values mean absolutely nothing. Our traditional allies that have stood by us shoulder to shoulder, bleeding and dying, scaling the cliffs of Normandy to free a continent. That means nothing to these people. They will embrace Vladimir Putin and Russia, if Donald Trump does. Again, I know Democrats don't like me saying this, but this guy was a Democrat his entire life until he discovered birtherism in 2011. He gave money to Chuck Schumer in 2010. Why do you sell your soul? And not just your political soul, you were selling your soul if you just keep lying about things that you know are not true.
Joe, the president is the behavior in chief, and that's where this starts. You have a guy who has made over 440 lies since he's been in office. He is setting the agenda. And the scary thing about these numbers, you know, if you're 64 and poor, right now you pay $1,700 a year, $1,700 in premiums. You will go up to $13,000. Think about this. Somebody at home who's 64 and is in middle class or below, that's 8 times the number. But yet if you ask them and confront them, the answer is no. And the answer is they do assume the American public is stupid. That is the assumption. Starting with Donald Trump, he sits across from every human being and says, I'm smarter than you. And I can say anything.
And how ironic it is that he says that.
Yeah.
What about the words of Douglas MacArthur? Duty, honor, country. Where does that fit in here? Again, I'm not talking about ideology. Be as conservative as you want. If you want to abolish Medicaid, then just say you do and explain to us why. But just tell us the truth. Stop lying and start remembering duty, honor, country. That is what should drive you, not some bizarre, obsequious fealty to Donald Trump. And Heidi, the Republicans on the Hill, they know how bad this is. They know that they are headed towards a minority. They know they are lying for a man who will throw them under the bus in a second. And yet they keep doing it. What do you hear on the Hill?
They are just seeing how toxic this health bill, how toxic this budget is becoming. I went to so many newsers across, news conference across the Hill on this budget, and they are starting to, Democrats, paint this health care plan as essentially Darwinian. as Darwinian survival of the fittest, and they can use these numbers from the CBO to back that up. For example, there's no doubt, you can't argue with it, that one in six people who are the very sickest people in our country are going to have to pay way more for less for their health care coverage as a result of this. They are right, Republicans are right, that the reason why we may, people like us, pay less under their plan is because they're taking the poorest, the oldest, and the sickest, and they're putting them into these pools and letting them fend for themselves. That is not insurance. That's not the concept of insurance. Insurance is risk management and spreading it all out, knowing that in society, all of us at one point will be old and sick and maybe poor. But under this plan, the reason why they're right that maybe the rest of us would pay less is because we're segmenting those people out. And now you have Democrats across the Capitol, like Al Franken, calling this Darwinian survival of the fittest healthcare.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, the Republicans, they don't give two damns about how sick you are. They don't give two damns about your pre-existing conditions. They don't care. They just want to repeal Obamacare. It's just something about it. You know what I think? I think the only reason why these guys are steadfast in wanting to repeal Obamacare is simple. Just because it's Obamacare. Just because Obama initiated it. Just because Obama it's his namesake. You know, that's the only reason I think they want to do it, because as we've all know, most of us level-headed people know that Donald Trump has been trying to circumvent, upend Obama's legacy since he's been in office. He wants to put an end to Obama's legacy. But I was saying the other day on the show, that's going to be impossible, because I don't think Donald Trump can actually do anything about Obama's legacy. The only people who can actually get rid of Obama's legacy or upend it or dismantle it, it will not be Donald Trump. It's we, the people of the United States. You know, he cannot rewrite the history books. You know, he will try. But it's not going to shake. It's not going to be too effective. You know, I mean, he is really trying to dismantle Obama's legacy. And Trump is a narcissistic guy. And that's not going to happen. You got people around here saying Donald Trump is the worst president America has ever seen. He's the worst president in the history of the United States. And I have to agree with a lot of those folks. And anybody who don't think that is probably a Trump supporter. You know, so as I've said at the top of the show, Obamacare is dead. It is dead. I mean, not Obamacare, but the Republicans' health care bill. I mean, it was announced on Capitol Hill, CNN. I don't think CNN is fake news. I don't think Huffington Post is fake news. This is where I get most of my news bites from. I think these guys are dead on the money. I think they're truthful and not fake news, or I would not be telling you things that I have found out by going to those types of websites. So, healthcare is going to live. Obamacare is going to live. But these guys, they are going to repeal it at some point down the road, maybe a few years from now. But it lives. Three times and you're out. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And my guest is Janet Kleinman on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Goodbye, Russia. Hello, America. And hello to Janet Kleinman on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Kleinman.
I'm here.
All right. Thanks for holding on, and thanks for calling back. Can you give my listeners a little bit of your bio and tell us about this slow? Go right ahead.
Okay. My name's Janet Kleinman. I am a grandmother and a mother and a widow at this point. But I'm the child of immigrants. Always wanted to acknowledge that our family had left Russia and came to America between the two great wars. And nothing has changed. Everybody is coming to America as an immigrant, and everybody was. Because if you go back into the Bible, Joseph brought his father, Jacob, to the Pharaoh. And how old are you, Pharaoh asked. My life as an immigrant has been 130 years old, he said. He was not as long as my father lived in their lifetimes as immigrants. And so the whole world is immigrants. We come from someplace, not where we were born. And we came to America eventually because this was the best country in the world and still is. And right now,
I was going to say, I think it's the best country in the world, but we're sinking low, okay? But you're right about one thing. America is a country of immigrants. Everybody at some point migrates here, and they love it. But we have our flaws, believe me. We're not as great as we could be and want to be. We have, as you probably heard my monologue at the beginning of the show, we have people in office that are just, we have a bunch of gangsters, the mafia folks.
I agree with you. I'm older than you, I'll bet, and it doesn't matter. So I've lived a long time.
Bet.
No, I don't want to bet. I look young, it's okay. Anyway, I had a wonderful childhood in New York City without money, and we had a wonderful education. And we were lucky to be born in New York City, because if we were smart enough, we could get into the city colleges for free. And so my father and his three brothers, there were four brothers, without them costing more than $100 a year, maybe, for books. And not any other city, do I believe, except at one time in California, could you do that. So I think I can't. My father once, I said to him, that he came here as an adult immigrant. Not as a child, never went to school, went to work right away. But this country was giving his children something that he never had the opportunity to have. So what do you think about that? Four children and eight college graduates.
I think that's a success story.
It was. And it was not a success story with millions of dollars. It was one.
A few dollars maybe, but you did it. You had that persistence to make something of yourself. You had that drive. You guys had that ambition to want it to be more than just an immigrant in the United States. And you made something of yourselves, you know, I mean, at least so far from what I'm hearing.
So far, we did. But you have to remember, too, that my father went to work every morning at 6 o'clock. Three things when he got an apartment. One, the children had to be able to walk to school. The children had to get up early and be at time when he went to work. Third thing is it had to be near a library. And it was absolutely amazing to him that you could take all the books you wanted for free. And those were the three things that we were told, you know. So anyway, I went on to grow up like everybody else, and I worked in the summer. That was expected, and I worked at all kinds of jobs, but I always wrote, and I decided on my second book to write the story called Goodbye Russia, Hello America, which is fiction, but it is based on reality. I mean, this family could have been any family from any country, I grew up with immigrants. I lived in a neighborhood in Brooklyn. If you weren't Jewish, you were Italian. The whole neighborhood was,
I live in a neighborhood right now where it's totally immigrants. It's so diverse. I mean, you could see people from all over the world in this neighborhood right here in the city of Chicago. And it's beautiful. It's something beautiful to see when you see people from all over the world in one spot mixing together and just, you know, appreciating each other.
Well, we had that. We had that. It was a given. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was an old lady when she came. I thought she was old. Today it would be considered young. I see pictures of her, and I see a woman who died at 68 who looked like she was 80. But, you know, she came with sons, and they had to work. But she did something. She wasn't particularly educated or had no money. She was a widow with four mm-hmm. children. They all got apprenticed. My two uncles, the ones who brought them here, were tinsmiths in Europe. So they came to America, and what does a tinsmith do? Mr. Ford was very good to them. He invented an automobile that dripped, and they became, they got down on the mm-hmm. floor, and they fixed the shield underneath the car. And then a few years later, they bought the station. So that's what they did. And my father and his brother were apprenticed in a city that was famous for its shoes, and they learned mm-hmm. how to make shoes. The day they got off the boat in the wrong city, there was something called a lunch.
In the wrong city.
Well, they were, but their brothers got a cheaper fare, so they drove up to Boston and got them.
Okay.
So they worked in the shoe industry immediately. Immediately, there were one flight with the people from the same city as you. That's all that word means. And they excelled. Everyone was looking for these. So she was smart enough to give them something to do, a trade. Mm. And I think that's what's wrong with many of the immigrants coming here today, although I'm not sure if I'm supposed to give you my opinion. And the interest that they're coming here without, never mind an education, without a career, without a job, without a skill. And I think if they had a skill, if we could only talk them into their backgrounds to getting a skill, they would come here and get a job.
Wow.
So,
Janet,
that's my opinion.
I was going to say, Janet Kleiman on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Goodbye, Russia. Hello, America. That is your second book?
Yes. The first book was
Can you talk?
Flirting with Disaster. Yeah. You want me to tell you a summary of the book?
Okay. Talk about your book.
Okay. It's a saga about a family that comes to America in the roaring 20s, and they face immigrant problems. The first is that we got off the boat. Their names got changed from Jack to Reuben. And what they find jobs, date girls, enjoy burlesque and bagels under the disapproving eye of her mama, who bemoans the fate of her eldest son, who stayed behind in volatile Russia. They go into business. They're quite successful. But after a decade of romance and celebrations of prosperity comes the Depression, followed by World War II, and that changes everything. Jack is parachuted into France, into Europe, where a French resistance shows him, pick him up, and get him to Berlin, where he's been assigned. He's a linguist. He was tested when he was drafted in the army, and when you're drafted in the army, they profile you, and they found that he was gifted in languages. And so they sent him to school, and he learned other languages that he would need, and they assigned him to Berlin to help find the peace treaties. He's parachuted into Berlin, picked up by the French resistance, and he, on the way to Berlin, he sees these concentration camps being opened. It's the end of the war, and all the Allies wonderfully did, is they opened the concentration camps and said, let go. But these people didn't have anywhere to go. Their old homes had been taken. They were skeletons of people, and they are dying along the way. And war is over. He helps them sign the Treaty of Berlin as an interpreter and gives that job to others. And he goes home eventually. But he's not happy at home. He's seen so much that he doesn't know he's going to do. So to help smuggle the Jews that were released out of Europe, because some of them lingered for years in the concentration camps, which became not concentration camps. They became detention centers. Mm. And he joins with an old Italian friend of his, and I'm not going to tell you what they do, but he feels he must give back to the country that nurtured him and his family. And that's kind of where I leave the book. I said you don't want to read the end of it.
Do you have the book with you?
Yes. You want me to read?
Can you read us a small excerpt?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
He has just found out that he's been drafted in the Army. His mama is crying. Everybody's upset. The children don't want him to go. But he comes out into the house at dinner and he says, before the dinner could be served, Jack pounded his fist on the table and stood up. The children grew still, as did the adults. Jack was not normally a speechmaker. My beloved Bella, Mama, Ruby, Lotta, and our dearest children, your uncle is going into the Army to fight the Germans. No, screamed Mama, not my youngest. Will you have to wear a uniform? Will you learn to shoot a gun? Will they make you an officer? Uncle Jack, will you get a chance to kill Hitler? Papa, Papa, how long will you be gone? I don't know. Maybe until the war is over. And that's where I'm going to end that piece.
All right.
So, I don't know.
I was going to say, where can we find it?
It's available at Barnes & Noble's and at Amazon. And then you can be ordered via independent bookstores.
Oh, wow. Is there a website?
Go into my name. It's Janet S. Kleinman, and everything will come up. Or go into Amazon, and both books will come up. This one and the other one, which you're not Haitian, are you?
Haitian? No. I've had other people say, are you Haitian? No, I'm not Haitian.
There are a lot of Haitians here. Plus, my first book is Flirting with Disaster. It's a beautiful love story in the middle of the earthquake in Haiti.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the only reason I told you.
Okay. So if we want to get in touch with you, find your books, we can also Google you, right?
Absolutely. You can email me. Do you have my email address?
Yeah.
It's Kleiwrite, Klei Write, @bellsouth.net.
All right. Janet Kleinman on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Goodbye, Russia. Hello, America. Thanks for being on the show. And your book sounds so interesting, and the stories that you tell are so exciting. And I want to say, once again, thanks for being on the show. And hopefully, maybe we can have you back again.
I would like that. I'd like to do the other book, which I think is also...
Yeah.
The other one's a beautiful romance. It really is.
Okay.
I have to...
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, we'll set that up for you.
Only get the other one. Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Janet Kleinman on the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was exciting, huh?
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place.
Okay.
Join me.
people working within the Donald Trump White House understand that Trump is pretty much a dangerous individual because of his explosive temper and erratic behavior. But earlier this week, Newsweek reported that people within the Trump administration are growing even more afraid because, according to people that work in the White House aides, Donald Trump will not stop yelling at his television. And it's because of all the coverage of the Trump Jr. meeting and all the Kushner stuff and the Manafort and the Comey and the Russia and Trump's lawyer. Everything right now is wall-to-wall basically negative about Donald Trump, with the exception of Fox News. And Donald Trump is so angry, so bitter, that he can't control himself. And according to people in the White House, he is just screaming at the TV when he's not rage-tweeting. What's interesting about this is that Donald Trump is such a thin-skinned little, to borrow a word from the Republicans, snowflake, that he cannot put his personal rage aside and function as a human being. Could you imagine what would happen if we got reports like this from the Obama White House? Was he screaming at the TV when people like Donald Trump were saying that he wasn't even born in the United States, that his birth certificate was fake, that he's from Kenya, that he's a Muslim, that he's palling around with terrorists? Could you imagine if Obama behaved in this manner? No, he didn't. You know why? Because he was a grown-up. He wasn't a man-child with the mentality of a toddler angry that the commercials came on in the middle of his favorite TV show. Obama was an adult. He was mature and responsible. He understood that people didn't like him and were saying these untrue things. And you know what he did? He ignored it. He joked about it because he didn't care. You know, somebody like him has gone through his whole life, you know, having a white mother and a black father. People picked on him. You know, it wasn't easy for him. He put himself through law school, became president of the United States. He worked his way from the bottom to the absolute top. He took all the slings and arrows along the way. He understands that you can't let every little thing bother you, or else you'll never get anywhere in life. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, a guy who's literally had everything in his life handed to him, doesn't understand that. He doesn't understand what hard work and dedication mean. He doesn't understand how to just let things go and focus on the task at hand, regardless of what the naysayers are saying. He doesn't get that. And that is just one of the very many reasons why this man is ill-equipped and should not be serving as president of the United States. Furthermore, for those people who work in the White House to have to live in a constant state of fear because they don't know how Donald Trump's going to respond at any given time to any given news, that is disgusting. That is unfair to those people. Yeah, they chose those jobs. They might stay there, but the job market kind of sucks right now, so you can't really blame them for that. But they are living in fear. They've admitted they're living in fear. And that's what Donald Trump is, and that's what his disgusting, unstable personality is breeding within that White House. If you like
the category.
I was just thinking, like, I know I'm being outrageously vague about this, but I don't even consider this to be a tease. This is more like a warning. We have a strange, exclusive story tomorrow that has taken us a long time to nail down. It is unlike anything else you...
According to sources within the White House, based on a new Politico story, Trump's legal team is getting super angry about the fact that he will not listen to any of their legal advice. In fact, sources within the White House say that lawyers will go up to Trump, say, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. And then he goes and tweets something stupid at the media trying to refute the Russia story. And then they have to have the exact same conversation with him over and over. The sources claim that Trump's lawyers are getting so mad with his tweeting because they're afraid he is going to further incriminate himself into some of the ongoing investigations. And to me, that is just the greatest part of this entire story. Donald Trump is his own worst enemy. And that's not just people who don't like Trump saying that. That's the people who are hired to defend him from these investigations, who are telling him, for the love of God, stop tweeting. You're going to get yourself in so much trouble. And of course, Donald Trump, being the narcissistic know-it-all that he is, thinks that he knows better than people who went to law school and have spent their careers defending criminals and trying to get them out of prison. He thinks he knows better. And that's why he's not listening. You can't rein in a personality type like that. It is a psychological construct within his brain that tells him that he is better and smarter than everyone else. No one can tell him what to do. And again, that's not necessarily an attack on Donald Trump. That is what that particular personality type, those are the symptoms of it. And yes, what Donald Trump is exhibiting are considered symptoms, not personality traits. They're symptoms of an illness. And this poor legal team, who I actually do have a little bit of sympathy for, is sitting there day after day trying to tell him to keep your mouth shut. Put your hands in your pockets and don't touch your phone. If you do that, we might be able to help you. But this man is so narcissistic, so arrogant, that he thinks he can tweet his way out of these investigations. And if he continues it, even his lawyers are not going to be able to defend his actions much longer. If you like...
Mr. President.
Senator from California.
Senator Carper, it's interesting. You talked about Tanzania. It reminds me of a greeting that I've often heard from people who live in various African countries. You've probably heard it. But when you meet someone for the first time, instead of what we would normally say, pleased to meet you, the greeting back is, I see you. I see you. And I think that really is part of our concern here. Do we see the people who will be impacted in the way that they are actually living their lives? And do we understand, if we see them, that this bill will not be in their best interests? And right now, for example, we know 13 senators, all Republicans, are crafting a bill, and this bill would restructure our nation's entire health care system, which, when you add up what Americans can spend on hospitals, doctors, prescription drugs, and all the rest, we understand that it makes up 1/6 of our economy. It would affect the lives of everyone. Our parents, grandparents, those who are in need of caregiving, our children struggling with asthma or opioid abuse, our spouses who may be battling cancer. And what is equally distressing is that this bill is being written in secret. The chairman of the Finance Committee says he has not seen the bill. The Secretary of Health and Human Services says he has not seen the bill. The American people, the people we all represent, have certainly not seen the bill. Well, I think the American people deserve better. This bill is being written entirely along partisan lines without any attempt to bring Democrats on board. And the American people deserve better. This bill is being written and rushed through the Senate with hardly any time to debate the cost or the details of this proposal. And the American people deserve better. Now, I remember when our colleagues across the aisle said the Affordable Care Act was being rammed down the American people's throats in the middle of the night. Well, the ACA went, in fact, through 106 public hearings. It incorporated more than 170 Republican amendments. The whole process took an entire year. But this health care plan involves no hearings, no bill text, and no transparency at all. As United States senators, we were sent here to represent the American people, represent the American people. We answer to the American people. So why are my colleagues from across the aisle trying to put one over on the American people? I've met folks all across California and this country, and they see what's happening. They know that if this bill were as wonderful as its proponents would like us to believe, it would be out in the open. The American people deserve greater transparency. But even though the authors of this proposal have tried to conceal the details of their plan, we know enough to know this bill would be nothing short of a disaster. We know, because we've been told, that it's about 80% the same as the bill that was passed by the House. A bill so catastrophic that even the President of the United States, who hailed its passage, now calls it, quote, mean. We know that it would throw 23 million Americans off their health insurance within a decade, including putting 4 to 5 million Californians at risk of losing coverage. We know it would raise costs for middle-class families and seniors. In every county of California, average monthly premium costs would go up, while financial support to pay premiums would fall. We know it would put Americans with pre-existing conditions at risk and leave people who need maternity care or opioid treatment without coverage, or force them to pay huge out-of-pocket costs. We know it would cut about $834 billion from Medicaid, which means less money for families to pay for nursing homes, to support children with special needs, or to treat substance abuse. Bless you.
Thank you.
And that is another reason we need the Affordable Care Act. To be in place in a way that we fix what's wrong, but we mend what's broken and not repeal it altogether. I recently visited, Mr. President, a really remarkable treatment clinic in Los Angeles. It's called the Martin Luther King Jr. Outpatient Center. Everyone from the doctors to the patients can tell you that when 46,000 Californians, 4,600 Californians are dying every year from substance abuse and opioid overdoses, it is wrong and irrational to cut Medicaid. So it really makes you wonder, why would anyone support this bill? How does this bill help real people with real challenges? At a healthcare rally in Los Angeles back in January, I met a woman named Tanya. Before the ACA, she'd sign up for insurance just long enough to see a doctor. She'd then have a few tests done and fill a prescription. Then she would realize she couldn't pay and couldn't afford to pay for the insurance beyond that. And she said it's, quote, the worst feeling in the world to have to tell your doctor, who is trying to make you well, that you cannot afford the treatment prescribed. Tanya told me, quote, before the Affordable Care Act, living without health coverage was a nightmare in this country. But she went on to say that has all changed. And thanks to the ACA, I can now see a doctor when I need to, monitor my condition, and stay healthy so I can keep working and contribute to our nation's economy. If my colleagues in Congress, and she referred to them as if the Republicans in Congress repeal the law, I don't know what I will do. So I ask, how does the Republican health care plan help Tanya? Another woman, Krista, told me, quote, I am married with 4 children, none of whom, and one of whom is a 10-year-old type 1 diabetic. He requires daily active insulin management to stay alive, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She went on to say health care is not optional for us. Even with health insurance, diabetes management is the type of thing that can bankrupt you. Without health insurance, I can't imagine what I would do. She went on to say, the ACA is a huge relief for my family. So I ask, how does this bill help Krista and her family? Then there's Rhett in Marin County. More than 7 years ago, he was diagnosed with leukemia. Rhett is 9 years old. He says, cancer cells are the bad guys. This is what he wrote me. For 3.5 years, I took chemo to get the bad guys out. I had more than 1,000 doses of chemotherapy. My parents had to tell my sister that I might die of cancer. And then he went on to write, thanks to my doctors and nurses, my family and friends, my church and my community and the Affordable Care Act. Now I'm, and then he writes, gone with the cancer. I have a pre-existing condition Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, my parents don't have to worry about losing coverage. A 9-year-old, Rhett, is showing us the way. But how does this bill help Rhett? Now, I don't know the party affiliation of any of these folks. I don't know if they're Democrats. I don't know if they're Republicans. I don't know if they're independents. I don't know if they're members of the Green Party. I'm not asking them those questions. I'm asking them, how are you doing? What's helping you? What do you need? And how will this impact you? And I know that I'm just one of two senators that they have. And when it comes to their needs and their need to be represented in the United States Congress and their need to be heard and their need to be seen, party affiliation should not matter. What should matter are the needs of the American people. And regardless then of who they vote for in a partisan election, I am certain of this. This health care plan that is being proposed by my colleagues from across the aisle will not solve their problems. And it will only create, in fact, more problems and potentially devastate people's lives. So to my colleagues, I say, this shouldn't be a matter of supporting this bill automatically if you're a Republican, or objecting just because you're a Democrat. This is about what's right and what's wrong. If you know this bill is bad, stand up and stop it. Speak that truth. Now is not the time to keep quiet and hope nobody notices. Forget the politics. Forget partisan pressure and talk radio and primary ads. Instead, just listen to the voices of the American people. Not just in California, but in Nevada, in Arizona, in Ohio, in Alaska, in Maine, in Pennsylvania, in West Virginia. Because they have made themselves overwhelmingly clear. Only 20% of Americans support this bill. A majority opposes it in every state in this country. It is the least popular piece of legislation in modern history. I'm asking you to think about the American people. I'm asking you to think about Tanya, think about Krista, think about Rhett, living with leukemia since he was just 2.5 years old, undergoing 2.5-hour infusions every night with such incredible bravery. Let the determination of Americans like Rhett bring us together, a 9-year-old boy who tells us, in his words, don't repeal the Affordable Care Act, improve it. Because we all agree, the ACA can be improved. It must be improved. It isn't perfect. And I am ready to work with anyone who really wants to make it better. Instead of playing politics with public health and people's lives, we can actually work together to strengthen our healthcare system. In fact, I'm proud to have recently co-sponsored a bill with Senator Dianne Feinstein and a number of my Democratic colleagues. Our bill would make it safer and easier for middle-class Americans to buy insurance if they currently don't qualify for any help paying their premiums. These are the kind of solutions Democrats can get behind. These are the kinds of solutions.
All righty, that's enough. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was my little tirade there. That was Kalima, I can't pronounce her name, but it was Kamala Harris. She's Senator out of Washington, D.C. Yeah, very smart lady. They're even talking about, some Democrats are talking about running her for president in 2020. Yeah, and she seems to be all smiles, you know? And hey, and she's African American. What can I say? She's a very bright lady. She's talented. She's a role model. And she would be a great president. You know, she would be a great first woman president of the United States, African-American woman. A lot of people have asked, is Michelle Obama going to run? I don't think she's going to run for president of the United States or any office. I think if she ran, she probably would win. But I think she's like her husband. They don't have the stomach for politics. I don't think they had the stomach for it when they were into politics, but that's just me, okay? Would I like to see Michelle run? Of course, I would love to see her run. But I don't think she's going to run. I think she's fed up with it. I think she thinks that it's a blood sport. It is. It's mean, it's evil, it's nasty, and I don't think she has the fortitude to do that. I would love to see her run for president. She's young. She's still young. You know, Obama would be back in the White House if she decided to run. Isn't that something? It would be his third term. But first, we have to get rid of Trump and Steve Bannon, Paul Ryan, Mike Pence. They are standing in the way of democracy. So, you know, I would love to see Michelle run. But Kamala Harris, I mean, she seems like she's a good fit, a good shoe-in. I haven't heard her say that she did not consider running for president in 2020. I haven't heard her deny it or say anything against it. But she knows that the Democratic Party in Washington, D.C., has selected her. And she seems to be all smiles. Oh, maybe we may have another female running for president of the United States against Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has stated many times that he's going to run again. I mean, on the first day of his inauguration, the first thing that came out of his mouth that he's going to run again. He hasn't even gotten his foot wet yet in the White House, hasn't even been to the White House so far yet, except for, you know, when Obama's family took him around to visit the White House. But I was one of the first things that came out of Trump's mouth, that he was going to run for re-election. Everybody was saying, oh, no. But if he does, he's going to have quite a bit of competition, and he's going to have some great competition. And I don't think Donald Trump public service, especially as the president of the United States, I think this lady is going to kick his ass all over the White House lawn when she runs for president of the United States. And I'm hoping she runs, because if she does, she has my support. She has all of my supports, because I've seen her several times in action in Congress at some of these hearings, and she asks some of the greatest questions. Her questions is so right to the point and so on the money that a lot of these GOP senators, they have to shut her down or try to silence her, because she is so she's so smart, intelligent, and bright, and they cannot and will not put anything over on her. So she would be a great asset to run for president of the United States in 2020, and that's just 3 years from now. So that's not too far away. So, you know, right now we got to deal with these Republicans. We got to deal with Donald Trump. But like I said at the beginning of the show, Obamacare still lives. It still lives because these guys are, one of my Facebook friends was saying that they're eating each other alive. And I do believe that. And that's exactly what they're doing. The Republicans are eating each other alive. There were three women who caused this health care bill to go down in flames today. Three Republican women, obviously, they were pissed off about this. You know, their constituency was not, they didn't want this. Put it that way. They did not want this. As I was saying at the beginning of the show. The people spoke. The people won this. The American people won. If it wasn't for your activism, your protesting, your signs, you marching outside of the Capitol steps as these senators get into their cars and go home and all this kind of stuff, you guys did it. You guys stopped this in its track. Obamacare still lives. However, as long as the Republicans are in control of Congress and in control of everything, they can always bring this, bring Obamacare, this American Care Act, up anytime they want to and vote against it, and vote against it or vote for it or vote it down. As long as a lot of, again, let me step back. A lot of people say that Obamacare is dead. It is not dead. It's just pushed down. It's just kicked down the road kind of thing. It's kicked down the road because, it just got through saying, as long as the Republicans are in charge, they can vote on this next week. They can vote on it in 2 weeks. They can vote on it next month because it's in their hands. This is in the Republican hands. So it's never quite dead. It may be on life support, but it's never quite dead because they can always reel this bill out again and try to pass it, the Senate. Remember, the House of Representatives, they've already passed it. They barely got it through. They wham, bam, and they got this thing through. You know, I'm pretty sure they cheated and lied and got it through, but they passed it. Paul Ryan and his cohorts, they passed this thing, and now the Senate is stalled in the Senate, and this is the third time that it actually died, but it won't stay dead. You know, it will not stay dead. So it's good. It's very good now. And Donald Trump is saying that now that the bill has failed for a third time, the bill has failed for a third time, if I don't stutter, he's saying it's pretty impressive. I mean, you just don't know what's going to come out of Donald Trump's mouth. And I've said this several times. I have no respect for Donald Trump. I have no respect for the White House. I have no respect for those people who are in the White House. Because I have been thinking all along that these people are doing nothing but trashing the White House. Gangsters, mobsters. Donald Trump is the godfather. And he screams and yells and threatens everybody and fires everybody every day. How could you work under conditions like that? How can you work for somebody who screams and yells and belittles you every day? And then you go out and get on television and start praising him. That's, I don't know. That's unreal for me. But anyway, after the bill died for a third time, Mitch McConnell failed in the Senate to get the votes he needed to pass this thing. Now, this is the latest thing coming out of Trump's mouth. He's saying it's impressive that it's because it failed. 7 years these people had to repeal Obamacare, and they couldn't do it. 7 years. So if you think about it, folks, this is a monumental failure on the part of Republicans, and it's a win for the American people. And Trump, obviously, he's trying to distance himself away from this failure, but he can't. He cannot distance himself from failure. Trump has nothing legislatively to talk about. There's nothing he has passed. There's nothing he has done. Trump is trying to distance himself from this failure. This failure belongs at his front door. This is his failure. He's saying, "Well, it's not my failure. I'm not gonna own it. I ain't got nothing to do with it." Yes, you do. Yes, you do, Donald. This is your baby. Don't try to hoodwink the American people thinking that you had nothing to do with this. And They are. He's trying to back away from it as if he has nothing to do with trying to repeal Obamacare. Because at one point and at one time, and probably still do, Trump wanted a bill on his debt. He didn't give a damn what was in it. He just wanted something to sign so he can have a win. But he has a loss, and now he doesn't want to own up to this loss. He's lost for the third time on this bill, but yet he doesn't want to own up to it. He's backing away. Trump has always been a sore loser. Just like Bruce Rauner, governor of Illinois. This guy is a sore loser. And you look at these Republicans who are awful. Most of them are awful. And you think about the kids that are growing up in a world like this. You want your child to grow up to be like Donald Trump? For years and years and years, decades, we've been telling our kids that they can grow up to be anything that they want to be. Even the president of the United States. Donald Trump to mess that up. Now, the furthest thing you want for your child to do now is to grow up to be president of the United States. The furthest thing you want of your child is to listen and do what Donald Trump has done or will do. You want to keep your child away from Donald Trump as far as you could, as far as you can. But he, as I was telling my guest here, I mean, the United States, we are a laughingstock around the world. There's no doubt about it. People are looking at us from other countries, people, leaders, other governments are looking at us and laughing their asses off. Hell, we're laughing our asses off. And it's not really funny because we have lost some standing in the world because of this. But Donald Trump doesn't give a damn. The Republicans don't care. They lost this. They lost this fair and square. And it's a damn shame that Donald Trump doesn't want to own up to this. It, as if whatever he says that comes out of his mouth, we are supposed to believe it and take it. Garbage in, garbage out. Garbage comes out of his mouth every single day. You never know what he's going to say, how he's going to say it. Even the people around him know that Donald Trump is unpredictable, totally unpredictable. He'll say something this minute and then he'll say something different the other minute. You know, he is the president of distraction. He loves to distract you. He loves to distract America because he knows he's president, and what he says and what he's doing, we're going to focus on that. You know, he tries to distract us from the Russia investigation with his other mess. Every time something comes up, he tries to distract us. And he's successful at it. He does distract us. He really does. He gives us so much garbage to talk about. While they're trying to sneak healthcare through. Get our minds off of healthcare. But they're trying to sneak it through. Sneak it on by. Because they think we're stupid. Some of us are. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Once again, I want to thank my guest, Janet Kleiman, talking about her book, Goodbye Russia, Hello America. She's right. There's a lot of immigrants in America. And like I said before, I live in a neighborhood, an area where diversity is key. And that's what it's all about. But Donald Trump and his Republicans, they don't think nothing of diversity, you know, because there's no doubt about it. The country is separated. And Donald Trump was hired to bring the country together. But there's no doubt about it. Donald Trump further alienates Americans. We are so far apart. We're so far apart. It's a shame. And Donald Trump, I don't think he can bring this country together, because maybe he doesn't want to. You know, that could be the reason. But anyway, as Americans, it's our jobs to do the job that these guys and girls in Washington will not do. They don't want to do their jobs. We get together, we do it for them or throw them out. And I do think that the Republicans in Congress know 2018. They know it. They're secretly talking about it. So, but I'm pretty sure that they're going to come up with something. We got over a year before November 2018. So during that time and within that time, I'm pretty sure the Republicans are going to come up with some diabolical plot to try to keep their seats in Congress. I'm pretty sure they're going to come up with something, maybe gerrymandering. You know, that's how a lot of them got their jobs in the first place. And I look at gerrymandering as a way of cheating. Arnold Schwarzenegger, he is taking the lead at trying to do something about gerrymandering with the Republicans. And it's also being seen by the Supreme Court. So maybe we can get something on that front. Stop the Republicans from cheating and getting an office and then sticking it to their own people, you know. So anyway, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, and we are still on the air. I want to thank my guest, Janet Kleiman. Goodbye, Russia. Hello, America. That's her book. Make sure you check it out and pick it up. Hate has no home here. When you are honest and forthright in all things, you never need to worry about covering your tracks or being exposed. Someone should tell Donald Trump that. All right, be nice to one another. It is so easy. All right, you've been listening to I'm stuttering. You've been listening to the George Wilder. I believe it's my teeth, folks. I don't know what that is. Anyway, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Maybe I'm talking too fast. On Block Talk Radio, it is 7:24 straight up Chicago time, p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm in my studio on the north side of the city, and we are talking Donald Trump. You know, I don't really like to talk about politics sometimes, and I rather talk about things that, you know, Americans are actually and really interested in, you know. That's why sometimes I have a guest on the show, and this person or that person to start talking about politics, and I'll go, tell us about your book, you know. And then after the guest is off the show, you know, I get back into politics. I don't know why I do that, but I guess it's just one of the aspects of listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. On Block Talk Radio, it's 7:25. We got about 5 more minutes left into the show. Let's see, what can we do with 5 more minutes? Of course, Steve Bannon and Paul Ryan. This has some bad words in it, folks. So it's being reported by the Huffington Post that Steve Bannon in the White House, I'm guessing a lieutenant to Donald Trump in the White House, Steve Bannon reportedly attacked Paul Ryan as a limp dick MF-er. I don't want to say the whole thing because, you know, kids might be listening. If they are, it's too late, you know. So, yeah, Steve Bannon, and nobody has, you know, came out and said that this didn't happen. I mean, this was this morning that I learned of this, early this morning, and so far nobody has come out and denied it. Nobody denied it. As a matter of fact, it's being reported by CNN that He said this. Steve Bannon reportedly called House Speaker Paul Ryan a limp dick fucker. I mean, that's what I'm reading here online, folks, on Huffington Post. It's not George Wilder making this up. It's what's happening, what's reading. And we're going to talk some more about this tomorrow because it's just awful. And I've said this several times. We got to get these people out of office. We got to get these thugs, these monsters out of office. You know, they're just trashing the White House. They're trashing our democracy. Wow. And they're talking about what I just got through saying now that, you know, Steve Bannon reportedly called House Speaker Ryan blank, blank, blank. And it's just awful.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help us all. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl.
Thank everybody listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Make sure you join me tomorrow, everybody. Bye-bye.